Welcome to this deep dive. In this lesson, we're exploring passwords, authentication, and account protection. If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now let's go further by exploring practical examples, future workplace relevance, responsible use, and how you can build confidence with this skill. Because we hear these wild statistics all the time, right? Like every 39 seconds, somewhere in the world, a digital account gets compromised.
Yeah, 39 seconds. It is staggering, but it's completely accurate.
Which is just wild to me. And, you know, almost every single time that happens, it doesn't involve some sophisticated movie-style hacker breaking through a firewall.
No, not at all. It's usually much simpler than that.
Right. It happens because of, like, one lazy keystroke.
Yeah.
Or maybe just a fundamentally misunderstood security setup.
Exactly. I mean, we tend to view passwords and authentication as, well, administrative friction.
Mm.
You know, just a really annoying wall between us and our actual work.
Oh, absolutely. Just another hoop to jump through.
Right. But moving from that frustration to, like, genuine digital confidence, that requires understanding the actual mechanics of how our data is being targeted.
Because it's not just about setting a password and forgetting it.
No, it's about professional responsibility. Yeah. Today, that means anticipating these architectural vulnerabilities long before they're actually exploited.
So let's establish the baseline reality for everyone listening. We all know the surface level risks, right? Hacked accounts, identity theft, some terrible financial drain.
The nightmares.
Yeah, the stuff that keeps you up at night. But the real issue isn't really a targeted attack on a specific individual.
No, it's the mechanics of password reuse at a massive scale.
Right, because I think people imagine a burglar trying keys on a single door, but it's not like that. It's more like using the exact same physical key for your front door, your car, your office, and, I don't know, your bank vault.
That is a terrifying analogy, but it's spot on. If a thief gets that one key, they get absolutely everything.
Which is exactly why reusing passwords is such a disaster.
Yeah, because we aren't dealing with a single burglar. We are dealing with automated credential stuffing.
Okay, break that down for us. What does that actually look like under the hood?
Well, let's look at the mechanism. When some obscure forum, or say an old retail website, gets breached, attackers just dump millions of username and password combinations right onto the dark web.
Right. Just out there for anyone to grab.
Exactly. And from there, these malicious bots take over. They take that single compromised password and they write scripts.
And these scripts just test it everywhere.
Oh, yeah. They fire it against the login pages of major banks, email providers, corporate networks at a rate of thousands of requests per second.
Thousands per second. Wow.
It's basically an automated robot sprinting through a city, testing a stolen master key on millions of locks simultaneously at the speed of light.
So understanding that if you reuse passwords across your personal and professional lives, you are literally doing the attacker's heavy lifting for them.
You're giving them the keys to the kingdom.
Like a breach on some fitness tracking app you abandoned, what, 5 years ago? That suddenly becomes the direct vector to compromise your company's internal servers today.
Yeah, it creates this really catastrophic domino effect. And this is exactly where the mindset shift toward professional responsibility really has to happen.
Right, especially for anyone stepping into a digitally enabled workplace.
Exactly. Because your personal security posture is intrinsically linked to your organization's perimeter. Securing your accounts, it isn't just about protecting your own privacy anymore.
It's about protecting the whole ecosystem.
Yeah. It demonstrates that you actually understand how data flows and, you know, how vulnerabilities propagate across networks.
Okay, I understand the theory, but let's talk about the practical application here.
Yeah.
Because we are constantly told to use complex, entirely unique strings of random characters for, you know, dozens or hundreds of accounts.
Which is virtually impossible for a human being to do.
Right. We simply lack the cognitive architecture to store that much random data. So the inevitable advice is always, well, use a password manager.
Like Bitwarden or 1Password, yeah.
Exactly. But I have to say, putting all your digital eggs in one centralized basket, that feels terrifying.
It does. It's a very common reaction.
Because if a hacker breaches my password manager, I lose my entire digital life in a single second. I mean, how is creating a single point of failure actually safer?
It's a highly rational fear. I completely get it. But it actually stems from a misunderstanding of how these specific tools are engineered.
Okay, so enlighten me. How are they engineered?
The main defense here is a mechanism called zero-knowledge encryption.
Zero-knowledge encryption. Okay, how does that work in practice?
So when you create a vault in a reputable password manager, The tool does not simply send your master password and your saved logins up to their cloud servers to just sit in a database.
Oh, really? I always kind of assumed it just synced up to their servers.
Most people do. But no, the encryption happens locally.
Yeah.
Right on your specific device, your laptop or your phone.
Okay, so my phone is doing the actual scrambling.
Exactly. The master password you type in, it acts as a cryptographic key that scrambles all your data into this unreadable ciphertext.
Just total gibberish.
Complete gibberish. And only that completely scrambled, useless blob of ciphertext is what actually gets sent to the cloud.
Wait, so the provider itself, like the company, they don't actually have the key to unlock my vault?
Nope. They hold literally zero knowledge of your data.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So if a highly sophisticated attack compromises, say, Bitwarden's servers, and they download the entire user database, all the attackers get is encrypted noise.
They can't do anything with it.
Nothing. They cannot reverse engineer your passwords without your master password. And that password only exists in your brain and on your local device.
That is fascinating.
And just to put it in perspective, the mathematical difficulty of brute forcing that kind of modern encryption, it would take the world's most powerful supercomputers thousands of years.
Okay, but, and correct me if I'm wrong, the vulnerability then just shifts entirely to the master password itself, right?
Yes, that is the weak link.
Because if someone installs a keylogger on my physical laptop and captures my master password as I'm typing it, the whole zero knowledge thing doesn't matter. They have the key.
You're exactly right. Which is the exact architectural gap that multi-factor authentication, or MFA, is designed to close.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, MFA prevents the password from being a single point of failure.
Let's actually reframe MFA for a second, because I want to get away from the basic, boring analogies.
Sure, let's do it.
Think of it less like a password and more like a high security safety deposit box at a bank.
Oh, I like that.
So knowing the password is like having your personal key, right? But to actually open the box, you need the bank manager to insert their institutional key at the exact same time.
That dual key mechanism is a much better way to visualize it.
Because if a thief steals your personal key, they still can't open the box without that secondary independent verification mechanism. They're just stuck in the lobby.
Exactly. The first factor is knowledge. So something you know, like your password. And the second factor is possession, something you physically have, like your smartphone.
Right. And historically, that second factor was just about an SMS text message, like a temporary 6-digit code.
Yeah, SMS was the standard for a long time.
But SMS is deeply flawed now, isn't it? Like, we've seen massive rises in these SIM swapping attacks.
It's a huge problem.
Where a hacker just tricks some telecom employee into transferring your phone number to the hacker's own device.
Right. And suddenly the hacker is receiving your bank's text messages and they just bypass the MFA entirely.
Which is terrifying.
It is.
Right.
Because SMS relies on the telephone network's routing infrastructure, which frankly was never built for secure authentication.
So what's the alternative then?
That brings us to the tools the industry relies on now, which are authenticator apps, like Google Authenticator or Authy.
Okay, here is the piece of authenticator apps that absolutely fascinates me. If I put my phone in airplane mode, like completely severing it from the internet and the cellular network.
Totally offline, yeah.
Right. Google Authenticator still generates a perfectly valid 6-digit code every 30 seconds, and the website still accepts it. How do the website and my offline phone know the exact same code without talking to each other?
It feels like magic, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it actually relies on a brilliant piece of mathematics called a time-based one-time password.
A time-based one-time password.
Or TOTP for short. So when you first set up the authenticator, usually you're scanning a QR code on your computer screen. You are securely transferring a seed value.
A seed value? What is that exactly?
It's just a secret string of cryptographic data. It goes from the server right to your phone.
So at that brief moment of setup, they establish a shared secret.
Yes. And from that moment on, they never need to talk to each other again.
That's incredible.
Both the server and your phone hold that secret seed. To generate the 6-digit code, the algorithm takes that static seed and mathematically combines it with a highly dynamic variable.
The time.
Exactly. The current time on the universal clock, chopped into very precise 30-second intervals.
Because your phone has an internal clock synced to universal time, and the server has its own clock synced to the same universal time.
So they can run the exact same formula simultaneously.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, they both just smash the secret seed and the current 30-second timestamp together using a cryptographic hash function. And out pops the identical 6-digit code on both ends.
And because the time interval is constantly moving forward, the resulting code changes every 30 seconds.
Precisely. It requires no active internet connection on your device, and there is no text message traveling across a network for a hacker to intercept.
That makes the mechanics so much clearer. So let's actually ground this in reality by looking at a real-world scenario. Let's take the case study of a student who experienced suspicious login attempts.
Right, the one where the attacker triggered a new login from an unrecognized device alert.
Exactly. And the critical detail in that story is that the attacker already had the student's password.
They did. If the student hadn't set up MFA beforehand, that account would have been silently breached. They never would have known.
But the TOTP algorithm stopped the attack cold.
Yeah. The attacker had the knowledge factor, the password, but they completely lacked the possession factor. The intrusion was walled off.
Now, I want to translate that student scenario into an enterprise environment for you listening. Imagine you are working on a collaborative cloud platform handling, say, proprietary company code or unreleased financial earnings.
High-stakes data.
Very high stakes. And a hacker compromises your password through a phishing email. If you don't have MFA active on your corporate account, you literally become the entry point for a massive data exfiltration.
Which is exactly what hackers want. In cybersecurity, we actually call that lateral movement.
Lateral movement.
Yeah. Attackers rarely breach the core database directly. It's too well protected.
So they look for a backdoor.
Exactly. They find a soft target, usually the lower-level employee's compromised login, and they use that initial foothold to move laterally through the internal network.
Just hopping from system to system?
Right, escalating their privileges step by step until they finally reach the sensitive data. But by utilizing MFA, you sever that initial foothold.
So you aren't just protecting your own inbox?
No, you are actively defending the entire company's network architecture from lateral escalation.
It positions you as a structural asset rather than a vulnerability. I love that. But defeating a single login attempt isn't really the end of the war, is it? Like, a blocked attacker now knows your password is valid. So what happens the next day or the next week?
That is the crucial question. And this requires a transition from just passive defense to active monitoring. Simply installing the tools isn't enough. Responsible use dictates actual vigilance.
Because attackers adapt.
Oh, absolutely. When an attacker is blocked by MFA, they don't necessarily just give up and go home. They pivot.
Like what? What's the next move?
Well, they might try to launch what we call a fatigue attack.
A fatigue attack.
Yeah, bombarding you with hundreds of MFA push notifications in the middle of the night, just hoping you accidentally hit approve in your sleep to make the buzzing stop.
Wow. That is incredibly devious.
Or they target the session tokens.
Okay, wait, explain session tokens.
Sure. So if I log into my email on my laptop, I don't have to type my password and my MFA code every single time I open a new tab.
Right, that would be exhausting.
The system issues what's called a session token. It's essentially a temporary digital passport that keeps me logged in.
Oh, okay. So it remembers you.
Yes. But if a hacker manages to steal that session token, usually through some kind of malware on your computer, they can use it to bypass the login screen entirely.
They just walk right past the bouncer because they have your passport.
Exactly, which is why routine auditing of your active sessions and connected applications is absolutely non-negotiable.
How do you do that?
You have to actually navigate to the security settings of your major accounts, your email, your banking, your professional hubs, and look at the list of devices currently holding active session tokens.
So checking what devices are actually logged in.
Right. If you see an old phone you traded in 2 years ago, or, you know, a browser session originating from a country you've never even visited, you must revoke that access immediately.
But, I mean, let's be real for a second. How do we responsibly integrate this kind of active monitoring into a busy schedule? Telling a young professional to constantly hunt for hijacked session tokens or subtle phishing attempts. That sounds like a recipe for deep digital paranoia.
I get that. But paranoia is just the result of feeling out of control. Systematized vigilance, on the other hand, is empowering.
Systematized vigilance. Okay, how do we systematize it without going crazy?
You don't perform this audit daily. You operationalize it. So say, once a quarter, you block out 20 minutes on your calendar.
Just 20 minutes.
Yeah. You open your password manager and run its built-in security diagnostics. Most of them will actually scan your vault against known data breaches and flag any weak or reused passwords for you.
Oh, that's handy.
It is. Then you spend 5 minutes reviewing the active sessions on your 2 or 3 most critical accounts. By making it a scheduled, mechanical process, you completely remove the anxiety.
It just becomes standard digital hygiene.
Exactly. It's no different than, you know, changing the oil in your car.
That completely reframes the entire task. It's not about being afraid. It's about running routine maintenance on your own infrastructure.
Exactly.
Which brings us perfectly to the practical growth advice you can implement today. We challenge you to conduct a baseline digital security audit right now, focusing on three specific architectural layers.
First, analyze your password entropy.
Entropy being the randomness, right?
Yes. Are you using variations of a base word like company 2024, and then next year's company 2025,
mm-hmm.
because attackers' algorithms completely anticipate these human patterns.
They know exactly what we're going
to
do.
They do. You need to identify where you are relying on human memory instead of generated high-entropy strings.
Okay, second step. Identify your MFA gaps. Look at your critical infrastructure, your primary email, your financial institutions, and any professional portals you use.
And if any of those are operating on a single-factor, password-only basis, or if they still rely on SMS text messages, you need to upgrade them to a TOTP authenticator app immediately.
Get rid of the SMS.
Get rid of it.
And third, evaluate your tooling. If you are using a paper notebook on your desk to manage passwords, or, you know, using the same password everywhere just for convenience, it is time to transition to a zero-knowledge password manager.
Right. And as you undertake this audit, I want you to reflect on the broader objective here. How do stronger authentication practices fundamentally improve your operational security and professional reliability?
It's such an important question to ask yourself, because the tools, they will inevitably change. I mean, 10 years ago, SMS was the gold standard. Today, it's authenticator apps.
Tomorrow, it might be hardware security keys or something we haven't even thought of yet.
Exactly. So the goal isn't just to master one specific piece of software. It's to understand the underlying principles of verification and encryption. When you understand the why and the how, you build real digital adaptability.
You become resilient to technological shifts. You develop a mindset of proactive responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, when you step into a modern workplace and configure your systems with strong, unique credentials and robust multi-factor authentication, without needing an IT manager to stand over your shoulder and force you to do it, you demonstrate a highly sought-after level of professional maturity.
That is exactly what employers are looking for.
Absolutely.
Well, before we wrap up, I want you to consider this final thought on the future of authentication, because as we move rapidly toward biometric MFA, you know, using your fingerprint or facial geometry to unlock devices and accounts, we actually face a new permanent risk.
Yeah, this is the tricky part of the future.
Right. Because you can always change a compromised master password. You can reset a compromised TOTP seed. But if a massive data breach compromises a database containing your biometric hash, well, you can't change your fingerprint.
No, you really can't.
As these technologies evolve, understanding the mechanics of how your identity is verified becomes more critical than ever. Something to think about the next time an app casually asks to scan your face.
It is a sobering reality, for sure. But it's also a perfect reminder that security is never a static achievement. It requires continuous curiosity and adaptation.
Could not agree more. Keep cultivating that curiosity. Stay curious, responsible, and future ready. We highly encourage you to review the end of module study guide and complete the workbook activities to really solidify these architectural concepts.
It will make a huge difference.
It really will. And for those of you wanting to dig even deeper into the global implications of digital security, be sure to check out the reference materials for this module, The Art of Invisibility, Cybersecurity and Cyberwar, and Future Crimes. They offer some incredible context on how personal security ties into the broader digital ecosystem.
Great reads, all of them.
Truly. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Take control of your digital infrastructure, and we'll see you next time.